We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to In the Know. We are back because it's December and feel like we got to give you one of these like once a month, I think. We should probably do it way more often, but you know, we have obligations. Mason, how you been?
Yeah, like life happens, but and also I think the team's more fun now, right? I mean, I'm good. I'm enjoying the last few games. Seems like these guys are learning how to play together. Obviously you had a lot of change in the offseason, a lot of unexpected injuries to start the year. No one expected it to go as poorly as it's gone, but at least we're trending upwards, and hopefully that continues over the next few weeks. Hopefully we get Zion back at some point this month, and fingers crossed things will keep going. How you been?
I'm really busy. I've been coaching Tulane's Ultimate Frisbee team, the men's team, and they've been doing really well. We just made nationals, so we're going to go out to Los Angeles, or I guess technically Norco, California, but right outside Los Angeles, nice, near the end of this month. So that's going to, you know, be a few days where I'm occupied. And then Thanksgiving, I was visiting family up in Tennessee, and that was nice. A bit too cold for my taste, but it was nice.
Nice. Yeah, I'll be we'll be in New Orleans for the balance of this month. We're just we're doing the snowbird thing that I think a lot of people tried to do last year during the height of the pandemic. We're a little late, but we're blessed to be able to work remotely for now. And so we actually broke our sublet at our place in Chicago, so we don't have to, so we can throw that rent money at other things. And so right now, staying with parents. I'm gonna spend a little bit of time in Austin in January, and avoiding the cold for as long as possible, you know?
I don't blame you, man. My uncle and aunt are going to move to Chicago after the new year. And I'm like, you guys are crazy people, but, you know.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Anyways, the Pelicans, as you mentioned, have been doing a little bit better. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're treading water at 500, which is way better than losing 8 straight. And starting, what was it, like 2-for-12 or whatever their record was. So improvement. Brandon Ingram has come back. He has not really looked too good outside of that last game against the Clippers. But again, the Pelicans are 5-5 despite Brandon Ingram not looking too well. People are speculating maybe he's still working his way back from injury, or whatever the case may be, he's had a clear positive impact in the sense that the Pelicans are able to actually win games. Curious on what your thoughts are on that. If you think it's they're winning because of him, or they're winning in spite of him, they are winning just because, hey, that's just how randomness works in life. What do you think?
I mean, I think it. Well, a couple things. One, it's not. I don't think anyone would disagree with what you said about Ingram and not really looking like himself. At the same time, we've been able to see what the Pelicans' depth looks like in the absence of him, and so even a BI at a certain high, not 100%, is better than what the Pelicans have been throwing out there. And so you can clearly see not just that. Also, teams care about him and how to defend him. So I think that, you saw earlier in the season how their opponents pretty much locked in on Ingram and made other players, try to beat them. And Ingram still got his, but at this point he's, less than 100%. I think teams have still kind of keyed in on him, which is why he's been less effective. But it's opened up things for other players. And so you can see, and other players are starting to, I think learn how to play together, like I said. And so I think it's a combination of cohesiveness and just the fact that BI even at 80% is still better than the end of the bench guys, the Pelicans. So it's a few things probably.
Yeah. I think that's a huge point, is that that's just way less minutes that go to Garrett Temple, for example. Or I guess that's the one I have the biggest complaints with. Saneranski's still getting minutes. I guess those have been cut down as well. But again, there's just at least some form of offense that the team is able to put on the court. I was interested to see what would happen to the rest of the players once Ingram came back. The pressure would go down and we would see efficiency rise. And we haven't really seen that with the guards. Like, Nikhil is still struggling, to put it nicely. Devontae's streaky. Josh Hart is Josh Hart. So I'm curious what you make of the overall offense and why it really hasn't taken a step forward, even though Ingram is back.
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't have any clear answers. I think, Ingram's health has clearly impacted the team and their overall efficiency. It's hard to pinpoint. Like, Josh Hart, I think he was punching above his weight class, to use a tired phrase, in terms of his scoring. I think, his improvement has been real, but at the same time, you can't expect to get a lot of offensive output from him in the scoring column. Like you said, Devontae is streaky. He has no problem taking difficult shots. I really haven't paid close attention to know, has the shot difficulty for him improved? It hasn't seemed so to me. And so obviously Nikhil, I think, is forcing things and not even trying to make things easier on himself, which is a big problem. But it's tough to really identify. It's also a function of their competition, right? In recent games, they played good teams. I mean, they played Utah twice. Gobert is not someone who's fun to go against for any player who likes to attack the paint. I think maybe we're looking at a small sample size situation here where they played good teams over the past four games: Washington, Utah, and the Clippers. So, maybe the Pelicans' upcoming schedule, it's nice. I mean, whatever you want to think about Dallas, I think Dallas is not that good right now, but they're honestly one of the better teams Pelicans are going to play over the next couple of weeks. I mean, they've got the Dallas twice, Houston, Denver, who's incredibly injury depleted, Detroit, San Antonio, Oklahoma City. So they've got a chance here to make some real noise, with or without Zion, as long as the recent play continues.
I think you're going to find this surprising. I'm looking at the last 10, which is since Brandon Ingram has come back, and they're 5-5. The players who have a positive on-court rating, players who actually have gotten real minutes, so that doesn't include Jackson and Trey and Najee and those guys, are Billy Hernan Gomez. He's a plus 6.2, or the Pels are a plus 6.2 with him on the court. Kyra Lewis, Pels are plus 6.3 with them on the court. And then Brandon Ingram, three guys. And then so Brandon Ingram is only 0.5. So it's a plus 0.5. And off the court, the Pels are even. So his net is a 0.5. But the guys who have a positive net, again, are Kyra Lewis and Billy Hernan Gomez, outside of those garbage time dudes. And that's surprising to me because you feel like the starting lineup, you know, a lot's been made of it and how like they're pretty good and they've traditionally been pretty good, but it's really these bench minutes that have been winning games for the Pelicans. Like everyone else is has a negative on off, literally everyone else, including Jonas. And I guess kind of like taking Jackson out of the rotation and putting Billy in there, I guess has been the fix for the last 10 games.
It's wild, right? I mean, like, even in spite of the fact that, you know, I did think that Satoransky was going to bounce back. He started about as bad as you could start. And while I'm not, you know, I'm still not really that impressed by him, he has played better of late. And, but like,
nope.
You don't agree?
Nope. He's fucking terrible. I'm sorry, man.
Do you think he's worse than Temple?
I think you're asking two very similar questions because they're both terrible. I was trying to come up with an analogy. I didn't have a clever one. No, they both suck because let me tell you, the Pelicans are 12.2 points per 100% possessions better when Satoransky's off the floor. This is over the last 10. And that's 29.2. It's negative 29.2 for Garrett Temple. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. I don't know, man. I don't think they give you anything.
I wouldn't like both of them out of the rotation, obviously. I think that, I don't know. I just think I prefer Satoransky to Temple. Not that either one are very good, but at the same time, they've got to figure out bench minutes for somebody. And I think the fact that Billy's been able to pick up the second unit, I think to a lesser extent, Kyra, I mean, he's had a couple really nice games, but I think Billy's been really consistent and he's impressed me. I mean, I didn't think moving to him would create this kind of uplift and it clearly has. I'm not sure if that speaks more to Billy or to Jackson, but either one is, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, is it Billy's just been playing really well, or is it, you know, are we just seeing how bad Jackson was?
Both. I mean, I think Jackson was terrible. I think Jackson needs time to sit a little bit. And again, he's going to be one of those guys that I've said this ad nauseum, but he's going to benefit when Zion comes back. He's going to benefit when there's like a real guard. And when your guards are Satoransky and unfortunately Kyra and Nikhil, those guys have not been very good. Jackson's going to be lost because none of those guys are effective pick and roll players. They're just not at this point. And Nikhil is the closest thing you'll get. And you see moments where those Jackson and Nikhil have chemistry, and that's because Jackson's able to leverage Nikhil's scoring gravity to get in those pick and rolls and catch lobs or catch easy pocket passes. But none of the other guards are really like capable of generating any of that. And Nikhil is a coin toss when it comes to making decisions once he puts his head down. So yeah, man, I don't know what's up with Jackson. I think he's going to be better when Zion's back. I just don't know if he's going to be good enough to get back into the rotation. Right. No idea.
Yeah. That's the challenge. Cause Jackson's out of the rotation now. And that's not even including Zion's 30 minutes a game or 30, whatever it is.
And they're going to play small when Zion's back, right? They're going to play Herbert at the five. I feel like Willie's been waiting to do that.
Yeah, maybe. And so, yeah, the main point being that, yeah, where do the minutes come from? And so if Hernan Gomez isn't relenting, I mean, you're not going to give his minutes to Jackson unless you really feel like you're punting on the season, or unless Hernan Gomez takes a big step back. And so, you know, that between him between Jonas and then a combination of Herb or even Zion at 5 minutes, like, it's just going to be really hard to get back into it. And so, I mean, and without a trade of some sort. And so that's the only way it seems like is a, if a hand gets forced and you trade like a big for a guard or something like that, and to create more backcourt depth. And so, which
they should trade Santoransky for Kemba Walker.
Why do the Knicks entertain that?
Because Tom Thibodeau said Kemba Walker is no longer going to be in our rotation.
Okay.
He's
why does that mean they want Santoransky?
Well, send him a second round pick. Look,
they don't want Kemba. They're not going to play him. So I just don't think he's going to be that difficult to acquire. So use a couple, like a second round pick or two. Send him Didi if you have to. Whatever you need to do. There's not any real value the Knicks are going to get for Kemba. So he has 2 years left on his contract. Santoransky's an expiring. Knicks love creating cap space. Send him Santoransky and grease the wheels with a couple picks if you need to.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, there's two things there. One, I mean, there's the whole 28 other teams kind of logic where you can, you know, is there anyone else who really wants him more? But your point about him having 2 years is also fair. Like, he's got another year, and if he's already out of the Knicks rotation, like is that money a team wants to take on? And so
because they have Derrick Rose, they have quickly.
Yep. They're all the same player. They just are better than Kemba at this point.
Or they're just more worth investing in for the Knicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So give them, you know, some guy that looks like he can play defense. I mean, if the Knicks want to send us a first, take Josh Hart, give us Kemba, and give us a pick. I'd do that.
Me too. Yeah, for sure. I find it hard to believe the Knicks would, but yeah, I mean, I would support a move like that for sure. Again, taking it back to Jackson. I mean, is he trade bait? I mean, do you think that there's a team out there I don't think he hasn't done enough in the NBA to have positive, like real positive value, but I do wonder if there's a team out there that thinks they can maximize him, that would give up something of value for him. But who knows?
Yeah. I don't think there is a team out there. not with like everything that Jackson comes with in terms of like craziness.
Fair. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just going to be one of those things where the Pelicans are going to have to ride out and see if he can either, you know, I mean, if you can get something for him, great, do it. But like, if he can take a leap and take a leap, you know, he's just going to have to be a body until he's not a body. And I think his qualifying offer, might actually decrease because he might not hit like the starter criteria. I mean, most likely won't hit the minutes criteria or the starter criteria in his fourth year. So he's going to be, yeah. It's going to be
the difference again.
Well, like monetarily.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of money. It's several million dollars, especially for him, because he was the eighth pick. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head though.
Yeah. So that's the reason I asked is because it is a lot of money for like the full qualifying offer, and I don't know if I would offer it. It's a tough call. I mean, at the reduced amount, assuming it's meaningful, then that's a different story. But hard to say he's earned it at this point. He's had like one good stretch in his career so far, essentially.
So what you're saying is if David Griffin threw him an extension this summer, you would chain yourself to the Smoothie King Center.
Well, tell me what the value of the extension is, and then I'll let you know. I mean, but yeah, in most cases, that's,
let's it say it like, was 3 years, $25 million.
Man, I want to buy in. I mean, I think you and I both have been a little bit more forgiving for on him in his case so far, but hard to justify through my eyes based on what I've seen so far. Tough.
Very hard to justify.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like that's,
you look at the centers that you can get and it's like, why would you invest that money if you're trying to be a semi-competitor? I mean, he's got to show you something. And so like, yeah, you know, either they got to start trying him out at like the four spot a little bit, or they got to give him like the ultra green light from the 3-point land. So he's like, maybe this guy is like a 36% shooter from deep on six attempts a game. Like that would mean something, right?
Yeah.
So they need to figure out what the hell they have with him, because currently, currently, you know, like there's guys like Hartenstein or JaVale McGee or you know, other players that are close to minimum level or biennial level centers that are just flat out way better. I mean, you look at even like Frank Kaminsky, who doesn't really cost all that much and has been spelling the Suns when Ayton was injured. I mean, Ayton played really well last night, but you know, he was spelling the Suns a little bit. And again, just there's the, you can find bigs to be effective for cheap. We have one in Billy.
Yeah. And to bring this full circle back to the comments around Satoransky and Temple, like that's, I think the one thing I have, it seemed like Willie was getting into this more consistent rotation that was better. But I mean, and the one big drawback for me was Temple. I really feel like I would have liked to see, you know, someone slot in at the backup four and get those minutes instead of Garrett, because like you look at the guys who are bringing off the bench was, you know, Kyren Satoransky. That's the, you know, those are your guards. And then, or in Nikhil too, like those are three guards. And then besides that, you have Billy. And so why do you need another guard? Like why, like pick one of Satoransky and Temple. I think it's Satoransky if you've got to use them at all. And then pull Temple out and let's give someone else the minutes of the four, whether it's Trey Murphy or Jax. Like I would have Trey's a rookie and I think Trey will have more value again when Zion comes back. I would have loved to see some minutes with Jax at the four alongside Billy and just like get, and that was after he was on the bench for a week or two. So it's not like you're just giving him rotation minutes. Like, all right, give him a few at the backup four, see what it looks like in that spot. But I don't see how he gets back into the rotation here.
Yeah, Willie Green clearly does not like Najee Marshall, and he clearly is not going to trust Trey Murphy. And to be completely fair to Willie Green, Najee Marshall has not shown anything this year to show that he deserves minutes. So I don't know what happened, but this dude just is another guy that needs to, I don't know, get his focus up. I don't know the best way to put it. Maybe he's just not that guy. Maybe it's a talent issue and he's just not who we thought he was. But you're right. I think something needs to be done at that spot. But I'm so curious to see how the hierarchy shakes out when Zion comes back. However, I do have a question for you. Two questions. What would you guess is Tomas Satoransky's points per game over the last 10 games?
I remember seeing he scored zero in the Clippers game. I would say 3.2.
Lower.
What?
Lower.
Oh my God. Oh man. I mean, is it so? What 1.6?
Nah, 2.6. 2.6 points per game in taking three shots and 33-14-71 as a slash line.
Here I was in our last podcast yelling about, I think it was last podcast, about how he, you know, he's been an above average 3-point shooter in his career and he's got to take more of those and be more willing to shoot. And of course he goes back and shoots 14% from three.
Great. Yeah. But he's taken the grand total of like 12 threes. So, you know, it's just, I just don't understand what purpose he's serving out there except for being big and getting cardio. And then Garrett Temple, at least over the last 10 games, is shooting 37.5% from three. It's like, okay, you know, he's hitting his shots. The team is hemorrhaging points while he's out there, but, you know, Garrett Temple, he's averaging 4.1 points a game and on 3.5 shots. So, you know, stellar offense there. And
I mean, the quote unquote value of him as a bench rotation player when they got him was defense. And like, at the same time, like obviously he's the oldest player on the team. He's 35. And so you knew that like he wasn't always going to be this, like, and eventually whatever you have on that end of the floor starts to decline. And so like, if you're hemorrhaging points while he's out there, like, I just don't understand why he's out there at all. You know,
I'm pretty sure he leads the team in 3-point fouls.
Well, that was a void that had to be filled. I guess he's there to take the mantle.
Well, so Trey Murphy is averaging 4.2 points per game to Garrett Temple's 4.1. He's only playing 8.5 minutes a game to Garrett Temple's 13.2. And he's got, and he, his slash line is 57, 55, 100. Playing 8 minutes a game, and they're all like almost all garbage time, so I get it. But like on a per minute per possession basis, Trey just gives you so much more. I don't understand what the love affair with Garrett Temple is. Yeah. I blame David Griffin for it. The stupid tampering shit
happened. On top of all of it, he's got another year guaranteed. Like, what the hell was that?
Oh my God. That just didn't, that was a disaster of a trade.
Horrible.
I would 100% of let Lonzo walk.
Just walk, yes.
And gotten a trade exception out of it.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. Like, you just, like, even if you can argue that you think that those players will be positive rotation options this season, which is not a great bet, obviously. Given Garrett Temple the second year was probably what I was the most irrationally upset about, not irrationally as in it was actually a good move. Obviously it was a bad move, but I was way more upset about it than it actually probably is detrimental to the Pelicans, just because it seems so unnecessary. And just,
I think useless. You're an appropriate level of upset about it. I will only walk back my anger, and that's not completely walking it back, only some of it, if and when they package that salary into something useful.
Yeah. But how many times have we said that over the past couple of years?
Too many times. Darius Miller, baby. Got a Steven Adams. Very useful. Very useful salary. Anywho, enough on those guys. We've been
kind of negative, and the team's actually been better lately.
So. The real star of the show is Herbert Jones.
Herb Jones,
monster defensively. I mean, dude's just throttling everybody. That's what I tweeted out the other day. He's throttling everybody. I don't have a better word for it. Maybe suffocating. That's just like puts a lid on everything, and anybody who tries to score on him, you know, they can't do it because it's not on Herb. Can't do it. He's actually shooting 37.5% from three. Thank you very much for the last 10 games, not overall. I'm only looking at the last 10. So any stats I cite going forward. However, he's only taken 8 shots from three.
Enough of a sample for me. I'm in.
He is 11-12 on the free throw line, which is pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, dude just knows where to cut, knows where to be, knows he's like a mistake-free player. And I'm super excited to see how he functions when Zion is back. And I want to see the small ball wing heavy lineups with him.
Yeah. And how often can you say mistake-free player as a rookie? I mean, I know he was at Bama. He wasn't a one and done type player, but still
over the last 10 games, he only has 6 turnovers. It's pretty impressive as a starter and as a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even like he's not that low usage. I mean, he's getting the ball. It's not like just standing around the corner, not doing anything on offense. He's making the right
plays. Yeah. He's not Solomon Hilling out there.
Right. catching strays. Poor Solo, man.
Okay. So he's been really good. Josh Hart's been really good. What I'm most impressed with regarding Josh Hart is his playmaking.
Yeah.
He's got 49 assists over the last 10 games, which is, 4.9, comes out right under 5, which is pretty incredible. I mean, we knew he can rebound. His scoring is, it is what it is. It's a good in transition, not really hitting threes right now, but he's playmaking, which has been pretty nice to see. He's making, I think there's at times where he's a little bit of a ball stopper, but I think you're going to go through that when you put guys in positions to make decisions that aren't in a habit of making decisions. So there's going to be times where he's going to be a little bit slow on the uptake there, but it's been a pleasant surprise. I'll tell you that. It's definitely raising his trade value.
Yeah. He's been great. He's been the biggest, I'd say besides Herb, biggest surprise of the season to me, because he's been the same guy for his whole career, I think. And now suddenly he's, like you said, he's playmaking. And so, you know, I think the 3-point percentage, I'm not buying into that. That's probably going to come regress. Like, he's not shooting that much better than
his career average. Over the last 10, he's shooting 29% from three.
Okay, so he's already regressing. So he was at upper 30s earlier in the season.
So. Yeah, he's 7-24 over the last 10.
and in spite of that, yeah, he's still making plays, and so yeah, it's been very helpful for a team that really, like you said before, in regards to Jackson and not really having a pick and roll threat. This team needs some help with creation, especially until Zion gets back, and so. Very, very much needed,
dude. So I'm excited to talk about this next guy. He's been an absolute monster, just completely unstoppable. And his name is Jonas. His last name is Valanciunas. He's made 18 threes over the last 10 games, 7 in one game against the Clippers, shooting 51.4% from three. He's made 18. Nikhil has made 18. He's taken 20 less threes than Nikhil. Nikhil's taken 55 of them, and he's taken 35. But Jonas has been, again, just an absolute monster. The Clippers try to go small ball, and they just didn't really have an answer for him because he was killing them on the offensive glass. I think the Pelicans had like 25 offensive rebounds, something like that. Or it was like, I don't know what the exact number was, but maybe it was the shot differential. Like the Pelicans had 25 more shots than the Clippers. Either way, it was just complete murder on the offensive glass. And that was already a superpower for the Pelicans last year. They were the best offensive rebounding team in the league. And the fact that you have Jonas doing all this right now, and you're going to introduce Zion into that, man, it's going to be exciting.
Yeah. I think the way I put it after the game against the Clippers is just that, you know, if this shooting uptick is real, and I think we have a lot of information, I would say, like, at least he's a threat that a team has to care about to a degree. He's the prototypical big man to pair with Zion. Like he'll eat inside. He's going to attack the offensive glass. He's going to draw fouls. And then he can also shoot. I mean, I'm not sure what more realistically, but like removing any, like a Karl Anthony Towns from the equation, removing max players from the equation. I don't think it's a better five to put him alongside, but with the way he's shooting right now. Awesome. I don't know what else you can say. Like, and the fact that they extended him before the season, weren't afraid to make the move, which, you know, credit not just for the extension, but credit to for not being worried about making the same mistake twice, because obviously they did it with Steven Adams and you knew you'd hear some backlash for it because of that. Still did it and looking like a better deal every single day. And so it's definitely an exciting thing to see him having so much success from three, in addition to, you know, being the same guy he has been inside all through most of his career.
I'm excited to see, because teams are definitely going to still collapse on Zion. And so if he's out there just spotting up, I want to know what kind of volume he's going to be getting when Zion's out there. And if, you know, if he can be, he's a 51% shooter right now. I was going to be like, can he be a 35% shooter at high volume? And maybe I'm setting the bar too low, but I think even if he was that, it would.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? you need Indeed.
It would be really beneficial for the offense. And clearly, you know, he's capable of being so much more. It's going to be so much fun to watch. I just don't know when we're going to get it.
Yeah. And one thing I've been thinking about a little bit recently is how the Pelicans use Jonas when Zion's back, does it allow them to play Jonas more? I think we both share concerns about how many minutes Jonas has played this season, but it's also about the kind of minutes he's playing, where he's playing down low and he's battling. And if your role for Jonas changes and not massively, but if you're really spotting up a little bit more when you're running through Zion, does that allow you to extend his minutes a little bit more than you maybe felt comfortable doing before? Which again, helps with the bench problems the Pelicans have had. I mean, all Billy's recent improved play aside, limiting the minutes for bench fives, I think can only be a good thing for this team. And I'm not trying to run Jonas in the ground, but I do wonder how his role could impact how many minutes he can play.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as saying that he should get more minutes when Zion's back. However, you know, the staggering of units is going to allow for some pretty interesting combinations. Either Zion's going to be beating up on some bench bigs or Jonas is. Yep. And no matter who is, it's going to be a problem for the other team. And honestly, I think going back to what I said earlier, is I think with Zion's return, it really allows you to play without a center, in my opinion. And so, you know, I think there's going to be matchups where you don't see Billy out there. You just see Herbert and Zion and B.I. because you can play Zion and B.I. more, knowing that, you know, Jonas and some of the other guys can carry the bench units if they need to. Right.
Yeah. And that I think the value of Josh Hart is really pronounced in the lineup like that too, just because the one thing that scares me about that kind of pairing is the defensive rebounding. And so Josh is obviously throughout his career, he's been really good on the defensive glass. And so if you've got a combo of Zion, Herbert and Ingram out there, you're not going to win many battles on the defensive glass anyway. And so, like you said, Willie can get creative about how he fills out the rest of those types of units.
Yeah, definitely. I would like Josh Hart out there, and then maybe it is Nikhil that's the last guy, but I would like more of like a shooter. I would love if you just put Trey out there. Just be a big dude, and it's an all wing lineup, and you have enough playmaking out there, in my opinion, and you have size. So I would love that. You could just switch everything too. Yeah, I think you put Trey out in that lineup.
Trying to figure out ways for him to succeed and really get more comfortable out there as a rookie. I don't really know a better combination of players for the Pelicans were to help him do that, except for that one. So, agree.
So here's a question for you. How long into his career before Herbert Jones ends up on an all-defensive team?
Well, the point of comparison is probably DeJounte Murray.
Or Matisse Thybulle, right?
Or fair. But also, I like Murray more because the Sixers have had more success than the Pelicans. And I think that helps as a team. You know, winning more games gets you that type of attention. So Murray, in spite of the Spurs not being great, still made it on and not playing a ton of minutes. I know we were all yelling about it because Drew played twice as many minutes as Murray that year. But I mean, I think you can crack it in your first contract if you're playing enough minutes and you're making that much of an impact. And I haven't looked at, you know, the defensive on off for Herbert. I mean, it's a lot of it to me is eye test so far and how much is impacting the game on the defensive end just by himself. Well,
with EPM, he's top 10 in the league right now, period.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
top 10. I mean, so is Jokic, but the rest of the list looks pretty nice. It's a
huge fucking grain of salt, man.
I think Jokic is up there just because, like, Denver's bench has been just injury-ridden, and they have nobody out there. I mean, they're even Austin Rivers got hurt right now. I mean, they're just losing people, so his on-offs are going to look really massive. and they're going to look pronounced in those advanced stats that sort of rely on that. But the rest of the list looks nice, man. Look like the rest of the list has like legitimate defenders on it. Anyways, yeah. I think it's impressive. He was top. Herbert's top 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you know he keeps carrying this forward and improving, I think year three is totally reasonable. I don't know if he gets that kind of notoriety in the second season, but I think
if the Pelicans are a good team, you know, like a good team, like 50 win plus team in the second season, which is a virtual impossibility given you know everything that goes on with this franchise.
Given the fact that they're the Pelicans,
right? Given the fact that they're the Pelicans, but you know. In the make-believe world where they're a good team, I think he ends up on one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's I'm so excited to watch this kid develop. I think there's a lot of people on this team that you can root for. And it also like it goes back to the coach. I think Willie's a really easy guy to root for, and they really like playing for him. And so, you know, they've been beating this chemistry drum over and over again, but I think it's legitimate. Because you're seeing some of these other teams that have gone through ups and downs, and the quotes that come out in the media, and you know the players only meetings that happen, and all that, like it's bad. You know, Luke Walton's already got fired. Alvin Gentry's out there fighting for a job, and so I think I am optimistic that Willie's going to get through to a lot of these guys. The biggest question is he going to be able to get through to Zion?
Yep, for sure. I mean, and so something I've, and this is way getting out, got ahead of things, but I think one of the other neat things about Herbert Jones and his potential career as a Pelican is this, the fact that I think that for him being an older player, he's 23 for like a 4-year guy in college, may actually work to New Orleans' advantage. I compare it to the Brogdon situation with, and how his second contract took him through his prime essentially, or takes him through his prime, would be the same thing for Herb Jones. And like, I'm not saying that he's like, you know, going out and getting a max in a second contract, but I am saying that like, it's cool to feel like you've got, to know you have kind of like control over a player through restricted free agency, and be able to match anything for contract two, which is not, you know, more potential development type years. It's the meat of it. And so, I think a lot of times fans just say, oh, well, he's older and that's not good. Because you know, you only have so many years of being a productive player in the NBA. I don't think that's always something that has to be a bad thing. It can be a good thing. And I think if Herbert Jones is a good example.
I agree. I think having that, I mean, that's why it's so important to hit on these picks that make an impact day one, right? Because often it takes 4 years or more for them to even start contributing. And the fact that this guy's here and doing it day one means you're truly maximizing the time that player has with you on the roster. Because we have several players who are in their third year right now who you question if they're really making all that much of an impact, right?
Yep.
We had players in the past that were 4 or 5 years, and you're like, I don't know what you're doing. So the fact that this guy's able to do these things, incredible. I mean, it's just so easy to get behind. I think it's – do you believe that it's contagious for the rest of the team, like the way he plays? Like they're like, oh, he's trying so hard on defense, like we got to as well.
Absolutely. I mean, look no further than I don't think it's true just for him. I think it's true elsewhere in the league. I think look in Chicago. I mean, we didn't see this Lonzo Ball defensively. I think I don't want to get into the Lonzo Ball conversation, but offensively he's about the same
player. Rent free in your head.
No, but it's him and I think him and Caruso, that is, it's legitimately, but that and winning obviously, but it's legitimately contagious, the active level of activity. And I think so Will Guillory wrote a good column about Herb a couple of days ago. And basically the quote that he led with and on the tweet when he shared the article was around how you just got to want it. I mean, it really is. Obviously talent matters, athleticism matters, wingspan matters. All these things are important, but you just got to want to be a good defender and commit to it. And I thought, you know, to hear that from a rookie is awesome. And it's true. I mean, Lonzo and Bledsoe didn't want it in New Orleans last year. They just didn't. And, you know, well, Lonzo at least clearly has the talent and ability to impact the game defensively. Herbert and Willie Green, and, you know, say what, you know, whoever you want. I mean, it is contagious, and hopefully it continues. And as the Pelicans can get healthier and win more games, I would think that only helps matters.
So, yeah, I mean, my other question was going to be, if the Pelicans continued their way of losing, like, how long does that goodwill last? And I was genuinely worried, like, we were, you know, going to find out at some point in the season, like, man, the losers really got to them, and they're just done. They're just done, and everyone's kind of playing for themselves. But I got to give credit to them. They held it together, and they've put together this 500 stretch where they're winning every other game or so. So, you know, it seems like they're going to lose tonight to the Mavs, and they'll win the next game if you know, past history is any indication. But can they keep that up until Zion's return? I don't know. I'm going to ask you one thing. I'm going to put an over under on Zion's return date on December 11th. So curious to see where you fall on that.
Later? Yeah.
I feel like,
if you pushed that by a week, I would have had a tough time.
So let's say 17th.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's right around where, like, so would be really cool. They play the Bucks on ESPN on the 17th. That would obviously be, I'm sure the league would love that if that was his debut. and so I think that's a reasonable target, just given what we've heard about him being cleared on to fully resume activity. And that's really the Pelicans' only national TV game for the rest of the month. I don't know if that's national. I'm looking at the ESPN schedule, so that's probably the only thing they're calling out. Is this the ESPN games or NBA TV, I guess? But oh no, they have TNT on here too. So yeah, it's their only national TV game through the end of the month. So I think it's a reasonable target. No, watch Griff like bring him back, or you know, the team bring him back on the 19th against Philly. But I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, they cleared him for activity, so I assume he needs to go through several practices.
Right. Well, they don't practice, right?
I mean, right, and they don't practice much at all because the season's so condensed and all of that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, I don't know. I don't know where his physical fitness is at. I don't know where his weight is at. I don't know what the expectation here is. I'm hesitant to get optimistic and be like, oh gosh, like, you know, he's on his way. He's around the corner.
Yeah.
I think for my sanity, it's easier to just pump the brakes and be like, yeah, he's still a little bit away, and kind of enjoy and figure out what they're doing here. The West has been pretty bad. Outside from the top of it, right? The Suns.
And there are more and more injuries too.
Right. The Suns and Warriors are just fantastic. Just really, really good. And then everyone else is getting hurt. And now LeBron is out for a little while. And, you know, the Denver's getting injured. Damian Lillard is out. Yeah. The Kings have had injuries and they fired their coach. And the Spurs just suck. And, the Rockets and Thunder or whatever. It seems like if the Pelicans are able to tread water, they can at least not lose ground.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that's another reason why if, you know, things move as we hope they do. The other reason I think it would be great to get Zion back against, like, in that ESPN game against Milwaukee, it gives you a couple games of, like, low risk situations. If you're really trying to make that push and try to get back in the conversation for the play-in, I would love for those first two games to be against Milwaukee and Philly, because those are two games that I'm putting as a loss anyway, versus you risk him. Obviously you want Zion back as soon as he's healthy and ready to play, like, full stop. But you know that, you know, whenever this happens, there tends to be some reintegration challenges, and the team, you know, usually there's a dip before the team starts to figure out how to integrate such a huge presence, both literally and metaphorically. And so that would be great to me, because, you know, after Milwaukee, after Philly, then you got Portland, you've got a couple other, you know, you got Orlando and OKC. Those are two games that I think you've got to get. So, and that's right after a stretch of games where the Pelicans you know, could see themselves favored in a few of them, which is something that we haven't really been able to say for a while, like at Houston versus home against Detroit. At San Antonio, I, you know, probably a coin flip, but, you know, if, depending on how the next few games go, maybe they are favored, and then OKC. So those are games that, again, you've got to get. And, I, you know, as good as Zion is, you could lose one or two of those as you try to figure things out. And so, again, like, I mean, so there's a lot of moving parts here. And, you know, more than anything, I just want him back. But there are other considerations here.
So you think their hopes for the play-in are very much alive at this moment?
I don't think they're, I mean, I think the team is going to go that way. I think it's very much a long shot at best. I mean, they're like six games out of the play-in, and they've got a bunch of teams just all clustered together right around there, and they're way back. So a lot would have to happen. Despite the fact that, as you found yesterday, that the strength of schedule thing where the Pelicans have the league's easiest schedule from here on out, but lots got to
go. Yeah, I mean, part of the reason they've had the toughest schedule is because, you know, they've been one of the worst teams in the league, so that counts against you, right? Everyone's better than yourself, so you can't play yourself.
Yeah,
right. You can't play yourself, and so it's like, oh, okay, that's fine. Yeah, man. I mean, like, I think my biggest concern is that it ends up like a typical Pelican season where, like, oh, there's like bits of promise, and then they don't ultimately they don't end up making it. And you've neither made the play-in nor gotten a good draft pick, and you're just kind of like stuck in the middle of the road again. And yeah, I mean, you're just doing the same thing. And the next year you're going into questions of like, oh, do we extend Nikhil and Jackson? Do we just keep them around and, you know, let restricted free agency play out? What do we do with Josh Hart? Do we bring him back? Are we going to let the trade exception expire? Do we make buy moves, sell moves? I mean, it's just like,
yeah.
Things are, I feel like if, as long as Zion's on the team, they need to either go all in and make big, big, big moves, or, you know, if this season is lost, then go the other direction and not just make tinky tacky moves like bringing Satoransky and Temple and a freaking second round pick. And you're giving minutes to players who are just like, meh, and you're not accomplishing anything because you're not giving minutes to Trey Murphy. You're not giving minutes to Kyra Lewis. And yeah, I don't know. I just hate this middle of the road approach. I think they need to be aggressive, and I would love for them to have a really good pick. They don't have to select someone from the pick, and then they use that to go all in, because I think there's going to be a lot of disgruntled players by the end of this year. I really do think there's going to be more player movement this summer than there's been in the past, not in free agency, just trade wise. And so I think they need to be gearing up to make the next move with Zion. And then if Zion's like, oh, well, buddy, I'm leaving, whatever, you'll recoup all your assets when you trade him. So, you'll have a foundation of a good team, because you'll still have Ingram, you'll still have Jonas, and you'll still have whatever you just went all in for. And if you had to trade Zion, you can easily like build a team around those pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll get to questions from folks later, but I think what you said is especially related to, so one of the questions we got from Remy McSwain is, can you pinpoint where we are in the season? Slow start. Team starts putting it together. Fans get excited. Key player returns from injury. Adjusting results in a losing streak. Roster adjusts. Team looks good. Injuries return. Grasp at the play in spots, but fall short. Like, that's
everyone knows what's coming.
How many Pelican seasons can be described roughly with that?
I mean, all of them.
It's so sad. All you can do is laugh at it. But
yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, like, yeah, if they're serious about this, if they're serious about making a run, then I would like to see them come December 15th start making some moves that signify that. Stop playing Satoransky and Temple. Trade them if you can. Use your trade exception. Commit one way or another. Okay. And then if you commit this way and come up short, whatever. I don't blame you. But if you're just going to sit on your ass. And the other thing is, as a question for you, do you believe Griff's going to have the autonomy he's had in the past? Because I know when AD requested out, they forbade Dell from doing anything that
trade deadline. They're like, you can't trade four people. You can only trade away people. So do you think Griff's going to have the level of autonomy he's used to experiencing this deadline, given how everything's shaken out and Zion's status for the future is questionable?
Man, that's a great question. I don't know. I think it's a dangerous game. If you think he's on thin ice and you think he's not going to make it through, I feel like there's also a lot we don't know about Zion, his camp, what they're funneling into the Pelicans front office and ownership. So there's a lot of stuff that would help to make this more clear, but I think my answer would be yes, but within reason. So like there's probably moves that they would let him make, but there are probably others. There are probably there's a line that has to be drawn around how much you can do or how far into the future, what the trades you're making are going to impact this team. But I don't know. That's a really good question.
Yeah, I agree. I think
with my non-answer.
Yeah, I agree with your non-answer because it's complicated, and you know, I don't think that they've made a concrete decision on Griff's future yet. I think they're going to wait and see how things shake out. They're going to see what Zion wants. So we'll see. I think in the meantime, he's going to have the freedom to do what he's able to do, especially if like good deals present themselves. I still think the targets right now needs to be guards. And so if they are serious about winning, they should, as soon as Kemba's eligible for a trade, I think it's December 15th, I could be wrong, they should trade for Kemba, get rid of Santoransky, and see what happens. I'm not trying to make apples to apples comparisons, but the Knicks sucked last year until they traded for Derrick Rose because they were playing Elfrid Payton and Frank Ntilikina and I forget who else they had, but they just didn't have any guard play. They traded for Derrick Rose and all of a sudden they looked good. They went on a run. And so I'm not saying that the Pelicans can do the same, but cutting out a clear negative in Santoransky and then taking a shot at a guy who can legitimately run a pick and roll and is actually shooting quite well from three this year and has been a pretty prolific off the dribble 3-point maker over the last several years is not a bad gamble in my eyes.
Yeah, I'd be good with it. I mean, I think given the minutes that he'd be taking, the player, I mean, that's kind of seems like if you can make it for a second, I would say it's almost, it would be a no brainer if his contract was 1 year. I think there's certainly more to consider when he's got a second year, but I guess like always, Pelicans can talk themselves into by saying, oh, he's salary filler for a trade next year and the trade that inevitably will not happen because it's the Pelicans. But I can talk myself into it.
I've already talked myself into it. I have talked myself into tanking. However, if we don't tank, then I think they need to make moves like this. I would love for another guard that I've been like, really, I don't know if the Spurs would ever want to trade us guards, but DeJounte Murray, who I've not been a big fan of, has actually been pretty good this year. And I think he'd be a fun get for this team. He'd probably cost a lot to get, though.
Well, I think another thing that would be cool about Kemba is just like he's a name. Like he's star. He was an all-star, and you know he can still play, and he's still a good offensive player. And that matters for a team like New Orleans. You know, having stars together. You know, I'll take what I can get at this point.
Don't and worry. He can tell Zion how bad New York is. And Tibbs is a coach. It's 40 yeah. chess, baby.
Exactly.
That's why we're doing it. Anyways, I think we've had enough.
Yeah. Now, let's wrap with this. All right. So the Pelicans next seven games are Dallas home, Dallas away, Houston away, Denver home, Detroit home, San Antonio away, Thunder away. No back-to-backs. All teams that, again, given the fact that Denver's very banged up, still have Jokic, obviously, the MVP, but still banged up, what do you think, what would be What's your, I guess, median outcome for the Pelicans over the next seven against those teams?
3-4.
Ooh, that is, it's disappointing if that happens. I think that would be, as early as it is in the season, I think that would be very deterministic for me on which direction to go full steam ahead on. Like, you can't lose ground in the standings against those teams. And if you do, you may as well just punt, in my opinion. I know that's what kind of the drum you've been banging, but I would look at that as a disappointment if they go 3-4 against those teams.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've lost twice or three times? Twice to the Kings, maybe three. I don't know how many times they played. Twice. They lost to the Thunder. They've just dropped a lot of games this year against bad teams. They lost to the Wizards, who didn't have Beal. So I don't have confidence for them to be like significantly, you know, I would have guessed 500 if it was even, right? But since it's not, I'm gonna take the under on that and say it's 3-4. What do you have them at? Or what would you like, what would be your median outcome and then the outcome that you'd be, you know, happy with?
So I think 4-3 is reasonable.
So I think you would be willing to punt if they went 3-4, but 4-3 is like not willing to punt.
So you raise a fair point. I guess I'm more speaking about like where, you know, where this team is and how, you know, how good they are and how good they can be, because I would really like to see a split against Dallas, and then, you know, you drop Denver or San Antonio and you take care of business against the rest. I think this team, the way they're playing, can go 5-2. And I would not bet on it. We had this discussion at the end of last season and I was the optimist and you were the realist. Although there were some injuries that came up right after we recorded that. I remember like that's when Nikhil and Hart and all those guys went down. But I obviously very much see where you're coming from. And I just think this team's gotta take care of business against the upcoming schedule like this, to make me have any confidence that they can actually make a run for the play-in. So it's less about the record to me, and it's more about just, you know, what do I see from them and what do I think they're, you know, how
good. What if it was like something completely ridiculous where they won both Dallas games and the Nuggets games, but they just dropped the rest?
That would be like peak Pelicans. So losing to Houston, Detroit, and Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. This team, I just
that's why I just don't think you can have like outcome oriented like goals and decisions, because it's weird shit happens all the time. And I feel like, you know, the Pelicans are always kind of like, oh, let's wait and see what happens with this before we decide which way to commit. I'm like, just have a, you know, top to bottom organizational aligning philosophy somewhere and stick to it. And whatever it is, I'll get behind it, but just stick to it. Right now they've been half-assing it for 3 years.
Well, I think that's hard because I hear you, but also, I mean, you've got to, with Zion and the situation they're finding themselves in, you've got to push full steam ahead, I think. And so like that, and that conflicts obviously with what a rational thinker would say about this team and where they are in the standings. So I can understand the conflict and the potential like competing interests, but I really think ultimately they've got to push and they've got to prove to themselves and the Zion that they can be something, even if that's in not in the best interests of, you know, the draft.
Then they need to be aggressive and get some real players in and not be afraid to lose some deals, because this Thomas Saransky and Garrett Temple's bullshit's not cutting.
Agreed.
And like Devontae is a great pickup, but you know, he's a, like what, where in the rotation is he on like a high caliber playoff team? Is he like an eighth man, ninth man? You know what I mean?
And are you serious? Wait, really? You think that of Devontae?
On a high caliber playoff team, you think he could be a starter?
No, probably not. I'm not gonna say definitely no. But man, I would certainly call him a six man.
Okay. So six man, I think that's fair. I would say six to eight, right? And I think that's fine. A six man is probably fair, but you know, it's just one of those things where I really like him. I think he's the best guard on the team, and I think he's going to look way better when Zion's here, but it's just like, yep. We're, you know, like I'm done with these singles and doubles. Like, I would love for them to swing and miss, which is what they did with Kyle Lowry. I give them credit, you know, for swinging and missing. They did that with Chris Paul. They swung and missed. But, like, that kind of mentality should have been there from day one, in my opinion. And it needs to continue to be there. And so I would love to see a level of aggression ramp up. And I know I just said, oh, like, go swap out Saneranski for Kemba, and that's another single or double. I get that, but I don't think that precludes you from, like, taking actual swings. Like, I think
not at all.
Yeah.
I guess beyond, like, timely salary aggregation, but that's about it.
Right. Jonas is a solid move, though. You know, good for that move, and A+ and locking him up. Love that guy. Yeah. That's great. I mean, that guy's been playing like a top 25 player this year.
Yep.
Okay. Anyways,
yeah, we'll see.
Hopefully the Pelicans come out with this with this win. You guys are probably going to listen to this podcast after the outcome of the Dallas game has been determined, but that's okay. We're gonna pretend like they won anyway. Herbert Jones locked up Luka. That's what happened.
Josh Hart locked up Porzingis.
He's questionable.
Yeah.
If he plays. Garrett Temple, baby.
Awesome.
Anyways, folks, thanks for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed this, and we'll give you all some of these episodes more often.